We're learning Shmuel Beis. We're now starting our new parak. We're in parak Tet Zion, which is chapter 16. In our new packet on page 306. So, David, in the previous parak, was being pursued as he was before he was a king by Shaul. Now he's being chased by his son Avshalom. He's not really necessarily being chased, but he certainly knows that that's inevitable, that his life is in jeopardy. There's a very good chance he would be killed if he would stay in Yerushalayim, or that Avshalom, upon going to Yerushalayim from Hebron, where he was before, would end up killing innocent civilians. And for that reason, David chose to flee, and he went together with others. He wasn't by himself, and he encountered some people on the way. And we're now going to see how the rest of this story unfolds. The David Avar Ma'at Meharosh. So David went Ma'at a little bit beyond the head, the Rosh, the head of the summit of a mountain. V'hine Siva Nar Mipiboshes Likrasa. And there was a man by the name of Siva who was a Nar, literally means as a youth. But really means that he was the servant and took care of Mephibosheth. And Siva came by himself. He did not go with his master Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, who was directly related to Shaul. And we'll see in a moment why Mephibosheth really never had any possible shot at becoming the next king. So Mephibosheth apparently stayed behind. We don't know exactly why. What?
He was lame.
He was lame, correct. He had...
Mephibosheth was Shaul's son.
Mephibosheth was his grandson, actually. But nonetheless, he was basically one of the few people remaining after Shaul, his sons were killed. Mephibosheth, some explain why didn't he go out to war. He should have gone out to war because he was lame. He physically was unable to do so. And the whole question was... Was he ever capable of becoming Melech? We mentioned before, way back, that Mephibosheth was already written off because of his physical disabilities, which on the surface sounds a little bit unfair, and maybe the EEOC would come down on the king, whatever it means to be hiring a king. But the reality is that we know that this is the case. We mentioned about how FDR was so nervous about ever taking a photo of himself while in a wheelchair, and his perception of himself being in a wheelchair felt that it would be a weakening way of looking upon the country. And therefore, there's some logic to it, whether or not maybe in those generations they were less sensitive to those who have disabilities than nowadays. But regardless, to be a king, Mephibosheth was never considered. But Mephibosheth did not come through. He stayed in Yerushalayim, as we're going to see.
He was living in the palace with David.
Right. And David took good care of him. After all, he was...
He left him with the women.
Mephibosheth stayed in Yerushalayim, and David used to take good care of him because of the relationship that he had with Avshalom. Because of that relationship that he had, and therefore he took care of Mephibosheth as well. The Rosh, it's translated here as the summit, the top of a mountain. So that's how it's... Yeah, it's... Right, that we mentioned last time how he bowed down there, and it was a very unusual piece of Gemara, which a lot of you enjoyed tremendously, about how it said that David actually wished to worship an idol. He wanted to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah, and the question of why he wanted to do that, so that he could be killed in a way which no one would think that he was a tzaddik, he should die as a rasha. So said the Gemara, which again is tremendous work, needs to be taken as far as that. But regardless, David is just giving us a little bit of a backdrop of where he's traveling from, and he encounters Siva, who is the servant of Mephibosheth, and he came by himself, as we're going to see. Now, apparently, David, he was on such a rush to get out of Yerushalayim that he did not bring the proper provisions. He didn't bring the food and drink, and he was probably hungry or maybe even starving and very thirsty. He wasn't by himself. He had many other people. To the point that, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that when others wished to join David, who were not of the faith, of the Jewish faith, such as Ittai Hagiti, he said, Kinachriata, he said, we don't even have enough provisions and food for ourselves, basically. For you to just join us, it's just, you're not going to be helping matters. You're going to make matters more difficult for us because we're just fleeing, we're running from place to place. So anyway, Tziva provides much food and much to drink for David and his men. But Semed, we're in the middle of Pasuk Aleph. But Semed, Chamorim Chavushim. Semed, Mesudas Tzion translated as Zug. So it was a pair of donkeys that had on them, was tied up, all these bundles. Valehem Masayim Lechem, 200 breads. Umeyat Simukim, and 100 Simukim, translated as Mesudas Tzion, for some reason, Me'ashkolot, Navim Yaveshim, there were dried grapes, which are raisins, but he didn't just have 100 raisins, like, big deal, you know, that's in one of those little boxes. So it's, Masudas Tzion is pointing out there were ashkalot, there were clusters. So it was a significant amount of these raisins. And Umeya Kayitz, Benevil Yoyin. So he had wine, and he also had 100 Kayitz, is translated in Masudas Tzion as Me'elitzrin Te'enim Yaveshim. So he had dried figs as well. So he had, apparently it made sense, maybe the bread not so much, but everything else seemingly is are unperishables, things that could last for a significant amount of time, which would make sense so that he'd be able to not waste all this food, not to eat it up too fast. Okay, so David is wondering, what's the purpose of all this food? Mi'yom ha-melech el tziva. Of course, David was hoping that it was for him. Ma'elelach, what is this? What are you giving? What is all this food here for? Ve'yomer Tziva, so Tziva responds, Hachamorim l'beis ha-melech. The donkeys are for the king, l'yachov, so that you can ride. It's not befitting that you're schlepping all over the place by foot, so you have a donkey to ride. Okay. The halachem v'hakayitz l'echol hanarim, and as far as the bread and as well as the figs, that's going to be for the kids to eat. Apparently, also the raisins, doesn't say. V'hayayin lishtos hayoef b'midbar, and for those who are weary and exhausted, what better thing can you possibly drink than wine? I would probably enjoy a little bit of water personally, but if you're weary, maybe the wine will give you a little boost. Little boost of adrenaline, the sugar, or whatever it may be, and therefore that's what all these things are for. Now,
was David going on foot all this time?
It seems that way. I mean, yes, apparently. Apparently so. Yeah, and that could also maybe be part of the reason of why the pasuk began talking about how he was slowly going up this mountain. He was, you know, how it's describing his ma'at meharosh. It doesn't say that, you know, he was flying, going 60 miles an hour, traveling. He was obviously going very slow, and perhaps it was not only because he didn't have an animal to ride on, but also he was so exhausted he just couldn't move as fast as he normally could. Okay, so he has all these things to give to him. Now, it's interesting. Now, if you're going to give this to the king, why wouldn't you just say, King, I'm giving this the bread for you. I'm giving you all these rations. You can decide how to use it as you see fit. So some of the Mefarshim, including the Me'am Lois, explains that the reason for this is that Tziva is actually showing respect to the king. To tell the king, oh, you have nothing, you're going to starve. So he didn't want to mention to the king that all the food is for you. He said, you know, you can ride the donkeys, but to emphasize that I'm giving you food for yourself may be a way which shows that that David didn't even have enough common sense to even think for his own welfare. And therefore, that's why some explain that it was written this way.
I'm very suspicious of him because
He has a lot of, we know that he has land, we know that he has property, we know that he's got a full name.
Who?
Not the beat, Siva.
Siva, the servants of Mephibosheth.
Yes, I know that. Why? How do you know? Because when the beat takes him, he takes him to the main Siva, who is lame. That we know that he has lame from before. From after his master's, Jonathan dies.
Siva? And he doesn't say that this is from Mephibosheth. He says it's from himself.
Mm.
And the thing is that David has people with him. So two donkeys. How much do you load? If you load as much as you can on donkeys, you don't feed the army. It's impossible to feed the army. Impossible to feed the people. You can give, it would only be for the king. How many people can you feed?
Right.
With wine? And raisins. I mean, it's
dates of figs. A couple hundred loaves of bread, so it could last a little bit of time, a week, couple weeks, whatever.
And me.
Yeah. Well, eat slowly. Chew your food. I don't know. I hear you saying so, but this is what he was able to provide. But it is interesting.
He's sucking up.
We're gonna see that. Big time in a moment, next couple of psukim, but it is interesting that he does not really mention anything about how it was provided by Mephibosheth. It sounds like he's bringing it from himself, and we're going to now see that he's going to try to speak in a very negative way about Mephibosheth to the point that some interpret, as we'll see in a moment, that David was Makabel, he accepted Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth, which we'll see in a moment. Before we see Pasuk Gimel, let's just look at the English, which I underlined. I don't know why I underlined it, but I underlined it, so let's read it on the page 307. David expected one more person to rally to his support, Mephibosheth, the lame son of his beloved friend Yonasan. So you see that Mephibosheth was the grandson of Shaul, and Yonasan and David were, as we know, very, very good friends. So as Yonasan was no longer, he felt an allegiance and a responsibility to take care for Yonasan's son, namely Mephibosheth. David had plucked Mephibosheth from hiding and guaranteed him safety and security and assigned him Ziba, a Gentile slave of Shaul's family, to look after his property. So it would have been natural for Mephibosheth to come to David in this time of need. Instead, Ziba came with a generous supply of food and much-needed donkeys and a slanderous story, as we're now going to see in Pasuk Gimel. But Yomer HaMelech, so the king who was deceived his whole life, the king who had people try to kill him his whole life, always was wondering who is his friends or his enemies. So the king said, "V'ayi ben Adonecha," where is, interesting the language over here, where is your master's son? He doesn't talk about, this is Mephibosheth, but he's not referring to Mephibosheth as Siva's master, but it is your master's son, because he was referring to Shaul. To Yonasan. And so he's wondering, he's perhaps trying to connect his love for Yonatan and wondering why Mephibosheth doesn't have that same loyalty, especially after all I did for him. Why isn't he here? Where is he? The Yomer, and this is where the Lashon Hara comes, so if you don't want to be Makab Lashon Hara, just don't listen to this next pasuk. The Yomer Siva al HaMelech, I'm just kidding. Hine Yoshev Yerushalayim, he's sitting in Yerushalayim. Lazy guy over there. Ki Omar, because you want to know why he's in Yerushalayim? Do you know why he didn't come as he should have come? He was supposed to be your friend after all you did to him, everything that you did, all the care that you provided for him. Do you know what he's saying right now? You wouldn't believe it. He is saying, "Hayom yashivu li beis Yisrael es mamachus avi." Today, the house of Israel will restore my father's kingdom to me. So the question is, how do we see that? Well, because David is out of the picture, so it's Avshalom, David's son, who is going to be in Yerushalayim. David's son, who has no connection to Mephibosheth. Why is Mephibosheth saying that I will be the next king? It's going to be restored, Lee, to me. Right? He's not saying that it's going to be restored to my parents or to whoever, some relative of mine. Mephibosheth wants to stay in Jerusalem because he feels that Mephibosheth, I will be the next king. So why would I, Mephibosheth, that's such a great person, the grandson of the great previous king of Shaul, why would I come and lower myself to David? So if you look at the Mesudas David over here, Mesudas David says, Hayom Yashibu Li. So the question is, why would Mephibosheth ever think such a thing? Why would he ever think that he will be the next king? It's David, or it's David's child, Avshalom. Right? David and Avshalom were the ones, that is the new line of Malchus. It has nothing to do anymore from the tribe of Benjamin. It was removed already from Shaul. So why would the son, grandson of Shaul think that he may get it back? So the Mesudas David is based on logic. Birosam behomos rabos b'vnei melech. They're going to see all the death and the bloodshed that goes on by the son of the king, which means Avshalom. So David is out of the picture. So who's going to be the next king? Avshalom. Avshalom's a murderer. We mentioned before he burns down fields. He's a destructive man. So people are going to look at him and say, I don't want him as king either. So David is no good. David's children are no good. Well, let's just get rid of this whole dynasty of David, all this business, and his children. Let's go back to the ways things used to be in yesteryear. Let's go back to Shaul's children. Well, who are Shaul's children? I don't know. So let's go back to Shaul's grandson. Continues Mesudas David, Ach harag es achiv v'kam al aviv. One brother kills another brother, which we said that was Avshalom, who ended up killing because of the incident of Amnon and Tamar. So he killed his own brother? What type of family is this? Which is a good question anyway. What type of family is this? So Mashal Hoy B'vnei Shaul. So what is left in the house of Shaul except for me? And Mephibosheth started thinking, I'm going to be the next king. And that is the reason, Siva says, why David, unfortunately, Mephibosheth did not come to you. Now the problem with this is it was a lie. It's not true at all. It's not true. And let's just see one more pasuk Dalid. Because Mephibosheth really was loyal. Mephibosheth really was always loyal to David. Mephibosheth, unfortunately, was not there to be able to defend himself. But Siva had his own agenda, as was pointed out before, that he doesn't mention who provided these items. B'yomer HaMelech LaSiva, so the king, David says back to Siva, so again, it keeps emphasizing, I am the king. I'm not going to tolerate this business of being overthrown. Hini l'cha kol asher l'Mephibosheth. Anything that belonged to Mephibosheth, I gave him a lot. It's yours. You can keep it. I thought I was being nice to this person, and this is how he repays me? Stabs me in the back, he wants to take over the throne? You know what? I'm still the melech, that's how the pasuk begins. I'm a king, and I am giving everything to you. Everything that belonged to Mephibosheth is now going to be transferred over to you. V'yomer Siva, so Siva probably wouldn't be too upset about that, and therefore he shtachav esi. So what does he do? He bows down. He says, I'm going to bow down. The fact that I've found favor in the eyes of the king, my master. So, if you look in the English over here, which is on the bottom, well, actually let's see the English on the 308, which is underlined. How could Avshalom's rebellion result in restoration of Shaul's kingdom, which is similar to what Mr. David said, that Avshalom would certainly kill his father. Mephibosheth reasoned, or so Ziba claimed, and his heinous crime would incriminate Avshalom in the eyes of the people. They would then depose him and return the kingdom, the kingship to the house of Shaul. So says the Malm, which is basically the same thing as Mesudas David. So we go back to the house of Shaul, and therefore, obviously, who is in line? No one except for Mephibosheth. So if we go down over here, there's the Gemara discusses this. interesting machloket dispute in the Gemara and Shabbos regarding whether or not David sinned by accepting this slanderous report, Lashon Hara. This was Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara really means it's true. This is more Motzi Shem Ra, but he wasn't saying it was a lie. It was not true what Ziba was saying about Mephibosheth. So Rav says that he believes Ziba's lie, which was a sin. Although he had reasonable grounds for doing so, it was still wrong. And the reason why Rav thinks that this is logical is because why did David immediately afterwards transfer all of Mephibosheth's possessions over to Ziba? Obviously, he must have believed him, right? Well, otherwise, why did he say, oh, everything that I gave to him, forget it. He has nothing. I don't want to give him a penny. Giving you everything that he has is yours. Very clearly, it sounds like David accepted this Lashon Hara, and which we're going to see immediately afterwards, he's going to be punished for that. However, continues in English, that Shmuel contends that David did not accept the slander. Although he said that Mephibosheth's assets would be turned over to Ziba, this was to only take effect on the condition Ziba's charge turned out to be correct. And therefore, he wasn't saying necessarily that I'm giving it over to you. He said, let me do some research. And if in fact it's true that what you're saying, then you'll get it and only then, but not until that point. Which means that David was at least, he didn't accept wholeheartedly these words, but at least he, in the back of his mind, he wanted to do some research to make sure whether or not it was true. Okay.
I also had just realized that Achitophel was the wrong advisor.
Achitophel, who was his right-hand man giving him advice, and all of a sudden he turns around, and now he's showing loyalty to... He's a traitor.
That he had too much what was being said to him. Who was saying?
Yeah. And so you can almost be sensitive and empathize with David. After all, he's been mistreated and such a lack of trust. All the people that he trusts the most, can't trust anyone anymore. So now he hears this. Maybe he shouldn't have trusted Ziba. Maybe he had an ulterior motive. He should have figured it out. But nonetheless, Mephibosheth, he probably also is interested. Everyone that I turn around wants me dead. Everyone that is closest to me hurts me. Everyone that's close to me wants to kill me. So therefore, you know what? Stands to reason Mephibosheth is also going to kill me. In an unusual way, Rabbi Mark Penner from the Young Israel of Holliswood, if I'm saying the community correctly, spoke at an Ohel convention about special needs children. And he actually quoted this story. Basically he was trying to convey how, unfortunately, some people look at those who have special needs with complete insensitivity. Because the reality is, David knew that Mephibosheth was lame, right? He knew that, 100%. So David was so insensitive. He didn't say it this strongly, but David seemingly was so insensitive to a person who had these special needs, who had a physical disability. Why didn't he come? He asked the question, where is he? Right? Those are the words. Aye ben Adonecha, where is he? What do you mean, where is he? Why didn't he come? He's physically incapable of traveling such long distances. Why do you think he stays and lives in Yerushalayim? It's because it's very difficult for him to travel. And therefore, the mistake that David made was not necessarily even the answer to that question, which was disputable, as we just read, whether or not he accepted the Lashon Hara. But the very fact that he had to ask the question shows that he was insensitive to the needs of someone who has a disability.
He was very insensitive, we know, because of Tamar. She was his daughter. How much more insensitive can you be?
On the other hand, I have to be a little bit cautious when I speak about a giant such as a David, so as not to belittle him in any way. But you're right, there are certain flaws that are pretty apparent.
What was great about David is that he knows his flaws,
right,
and he knows it as Shabbat.
Right.
If he did Shabbat without having flaws, then obviously he has flaws.
Yeah, as we all do.
Why can they look at this question where's your master? Where is he? And still you know he can't walk, why are you leaving him alone? He should have looked at it suspiciously. Why are you, where is he? What
right.
are you doing here?
Right.
Where is he? You're responsible for him.
Right.
You should be taking care of him.
That's right.
So you can look at it both ways.
So David's first question was, oh, what's all this food? Oh, the food's for me. Great. So he was thinking about, I guess he was also pretty hungry. So he was thinking about himself. And then afterwards, he wasn't even thinking about this person who unfortunately is bedridden or whatever. He can't get out. And the person, his 24-hour home care is gone.
Right.
But then again, when you give me all these delicious foods, presents, gifts, so that's part of Shochad. You get some bribes and things. Yeah.
Show what happened to him.
Right.
While things were good.
That what?
He was not as alert as he was that he acted when things were bad. He came to life when things were bad. Otherwise,
right.
he was not involved with his people.
Right. And that's what his son was trying to, the message, when he was sitting around talking to them. Yes?
I think the greatness of the heart is really that to represent a person who was, like David, a great person, as a human being.
That's it.
Not as a Superman.
Right.
He had all the faults of a human being.
Right. That's correct. That's correct. And that's
the greatness of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov.
Right.
That makes it so interesting, and that people can really relate to it.
Right. Because if they're not human, then how could I ever compare myself, or how could I learn from them to try to aspire to be like them? I'll never be anywhere near like them. So what's the point? So.
It's now thought of by the Christian. The saints are so superhuman that
right.
nobody can be like them.
Right.
They really don't own their faults and not mentioned in
right.
our stories.
Right. And it's deflating when you read those types of stories. And then you see David, who makes mistakes and has weaknesses, but yet says Chatasi, he acknowledges his mistakes. It gives us strength and hope that we also have the capacity to change and improve.
After all the bad things, today I was reading where he curses everybody when he's miserable, so his curses are in Mach Shemam and so on. This man suffered, but he knew that he was guilty, and
right.
he knew that therefore he suffered.
Right, right.
And he was sorry.
Right.
So this is the road that he walked.
Right. But acknowledging your shortcomings is something which we don't always do, which David does, which is admirable. Okay.
He never says he made me do it.
Yeah, he owns up to his mistakes. Pasukei. Uva hamelech David ad Bachurim. So David now goes until Bachurim, which is a place. The Radak says it's Ir Mibnei Binyamin. It's a city in the area of Binyamin. By Yerushalayim, v'hini mishom ish yotzim mishpachas beis Shaul. So there was a person that came out who happened to be from the family of Beit Shaul, which obviously he probably doesn't like David all that much, because after all, Shaul is no longer, is Shaul's children the king. David is the king. Ushmo, just for the sake of who this person was, his name was Shimi ben Gera, Yotze Yotzo Umekalel. So did he go out to shake his hand, to get an autograph? No. He went out Umekalel. And his intention was to curse, was to humiliate David. And that's what he was coming out to do.
Right. David must have certainly known him. So
yes.
David's brilliance, how he could not somehow intuitively know that Ahitophel and Shimei and all these great, wonderful people that he surrounded himself with were really very deeply flawed and against him.
Right. So we're gonna see that Rashi is gonna point out. Rashi will point out that this man Shimei ben Gera was a member or even the head of the great Sanhedrin, and because of that, David is going to, even though being mistreated and being called the worst curses imaginable, and not only that, as we'll see in Pasuk Vav, the things that he does to David, David doesn't react, and David is going to, we're going to see David's reaction is, it's a sign that he is a shliach, he's just an agent of God, and therefore I have to accept these things. Obviously, I made a mistake. And some people learn out that this is the mistake for what he made by accepting the words of Tziva, the Lashon Hara against Mipiboshes. And it makes sense, because after all, the Pasuk says, Mishpachas Beis Shaul, that he came from Shaul. So you see there's this connection. We're going to see it in the next Pasuk in a minute. Right, which is where Shaul is, right? So it makes sense that there are people. He's traveling in the.
Why is he going? Yerushalayim is just on the border of.
Right.
So why does he go over there? Why is he going in that direction?
Well, the tribe of the Beis Hamikdash was built by on the border of Binyamin.
Right.
The question.
If he goes to the right, he's in Yehuda. If he goes to the left, he's in Binyamin.
Right.
So why is he choosing?
That's a good question.
He's not thinking clearly. He's just running away.
Right. And when you run, you don't really pay too much attention to where you're going. You're running just to run. So he's getting cursed. And Pasuk Vav tells us that wasn't enough. V'yisakel ba'avanim es David. Can you imagine? This is the king. He doesn't call him the melech anymore, because obviously he didn't treat him like a king. Throwing stones at such a great person. Can we imagine ever throwing stones at a great person? Moshe Rabbeinu himself said that the Bnei Yisrael were going to stone him to death. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he's known as Moshe the Great Rabbi. He's the greatest of all rabbis, and yet his members wanted to stone him to death. So I don't know if that's a good or bad sign.
They lost respect to him.
They lost respect. He's running away, but he's throwing stones. Apparently wanting to kill him or to injure him. Not only David, v'yaskol av de hamelech David, all of the servants of David, he wasn't discriminating against anyone. He was more than happy to throw stones against everyone. V'chol av v'chol hagiborim mimino umismalo, all of the nation that was with him, the people who were strong, those who were to the right of him, and those who were to the left of him, all of his soldiers. And you can ask yourself the obvious question, is this guy insane? I mean, you can't start a war one person against an army. He's throwing stones against David. Okay, you're making a statement. But the statement you're going to basically make is, I'm suicidal because they're going to kill me, right? So why on earth would he do such a thing? Obviously, he felt that David did something wrong. And perhaps he even realized that David would accept this mussar, that David would not kill him, but hopefully that he would learn from this the message that in fact he made a mistake, whatever that mistake was. So very interesting language, which is not found in our packet, but the Gemara says in Erechin the following, Omar Mar Ukva, Kol HaMasaper Lashon Hara, we're going to understand what these words mean, but he defines a little bit better. Anyone who speaks, or for that matter, who accepts Lashon Hara, Ro'oi L'Soklo Be'Evan, it's befitting that you should get thrown stones at you. People should throw stones at you. How do we see that? L'chein Kivan Shedavid Kiba Lashon Hara Al Mipiboshes. Once David was accepting the Lashon Hara about Mipiboshes, Miyad Hushachol L'Vavanim. The Talmud learns out that there is a reason this juxtaposition, these two stories, the connection of him being stoned, is that he deserved this punishment of being thrown, getting stones thrown at him because of the Lashon Hara that he accepted. And some explain, as the Maharsha does, as others, is that when you speak Lashon Hara about a person, it's not just, big deal, you said something not nice. Sometimes, if you get a little punch in the arm, so you have a little bruise, a little black and blue mark, nothing too bad, right? Nothing too significant. However, when a person speaks Lashon Hara, it's akin to being shot in the heart by an arrow, or being shot in the heart, if you will, being a stone smashing right into your heart. It hits you in a very deep, deep way. In a way which doesn't, maybe you don't even see it. So therefore, that's the idea of this person throwing these stones, or like being shot at, bullets at you, because that's what you were really doing. When you shoot with your mouth, you're speaking Lashon Hara, you're harming a person in such a significant way that it's akin to getting shot or thrown rocks at you. And that's how the Gemara learns out from the story how serious it is that a person should be sensitive and never speak Lashon Hara. Okay. Again, that's only according to those opinions that say that he made this mistake of accepting Lashon Hara. Regardless, continues the next pasuk. Pasuk Zion says, "V'chol amar shimi b'kalo." If you want to know exactly what were the curses, what was he saying? He said, "Say tse'ish hadamim v'ish habli oil." Go out. Say again. Get out. Get out of here. Get out. And ish damim, a man of blood, which means you're a murderer. You're a criminal. You're a no good person. You kill people. V'ish habli oil. You are, as it translates, you are a base man. Bli'al generally is translated in the Gemara as bli'ol, that you do not have a yoke, the yoke of heaven. Which means you do not have any values. You don't accept and have integrity in that which you are supposed to have as being a quote-unquote observant person. Well, you're such a religious guy, you're a murderer, you're a terrible person. Get out of here. And perhaps the tse'tse'e was also, you're a murderer. I don't want you in the Binyamin's territory. You're probably going to kill more of us. Get out of here. So, who is exactly, who is he being accused of having killed? So, the Radak says over here, Ish tadamim, v'yesh lefarish, shechashtu b'demei ish boshas, u'demei avner. He was suspected of having killed people such as ish boshas, who was the son of Shaul, as well as Avner. And if you skip another line, Klomer Haratu Besum Melechas Tachta. Basically, what he was saying is that you are trying to kill out all of the Malchus of Beis Shaul, the kingship of Shaul. Therefore, it makes sense that he doesn't want him here. Get out of here. So, Heishiv Alecha Hashem, Kol Deme Beis Shaul, continues in Pasuk Ches. He's saying, I'm going to tell you what's happening. Hashem is repaying you, Kol Demei Beis Shaul, for all the blood that you spilled in my family from the house of Shaul, Asher Malachta Tachta, that you took over the position of being king. Of course you did, because you killed out all my family. V'yitin Hashem es hamelucha b'yad Avshalom b'necha. And because of that, you want to know how it feels? Give you a taste of your own medicine? You killed a whole bunch of people to take over the throne? Your own child is going to kill you, pursue you, so that he'll be able to take over the throne as you did to my relatives, to the house of Shaul. V'hincha barascha ki'ish damim ata. And he concludes and says, you are now being afflicted. It's bad things are happening to you because ki'ish damim ata. Because you're a man of blood. You're a violent man. So what do you expect? You want to live a peaceful life? You can't have it both ways. You're a murderer, you're a criminal, and all of a sudden you're in your palace, in your shalim, acting like you're some big tzaddik? No. It's going to catch up to you. And unfortunately what's going to be happening is you're going to be killed. So I don't want any part of you being in my neighborhood, because I know all you're going to do is probably kill more of my family that you already killed. Yes.
Who was that? From
Avshalom.
Yeah. So this is a whole new
Indian. I mean, he, as we mentioned, he could have gone one way, went the other way, you know, and he came into the house of Ben, you know, the tribe of Binyamin, which is where Shaul is from. So you're going to get a lot of angry people when they would come across David. A lot of people that felt that, you know, the Melech should continue. Malchus, what do you mean? Why would it switch over from one Shevet, one tribe, to another? Why should it go leave the tribe of Binyamin? So they were angry at him. So we're going to see, let's just see these last two psukim, then we'll see the Rashi. We'll stop. Yom Avishai ben Tsruya el HaMelech. So Avishai, the son of Tsruya, said to the king, this is ridiculous. Why are you tolerating this guy? Why are you listening to this one person? Lami kalo hakel of hamesa zeh. Why are you allowing this person to kill you? To curse you, rather. He's not even a person. He's an animal. He's a dog. He's a kelv mace. To me, he's not even a living dog. He's a dead dog. He's a nobody. I said, Doni HaMelech, why are you allowing this? You know what? I know you've been accused. You know, even if you are, you're accused of something and you may feel guilty because it may be true. Like, maybe David really wanted to kill him. But, you know, you just accused me of being a murderer, so I feel bad killing you. You know, because you know what? In the back of my mind, you know, maybe he was right. So, you know what, David? Don't worry about it. Relax. Sit on the new donkeys. Have some of the wine, some raisins. Enjoy yourself. Ebronav Asiras Rosho. Could you do me a favor? Give me a very simple command. Let me go. And Vasira Esro show, that beautiful head that is attached to his body. Do you mind if I cut it off? Is that okay? And that'll be the end of the... No more of this business, this cursing, an insult. You're my king. I can't handle this anymore. So what does David say? David could have just said, put his thumb down or whatever they used to do. No. V'yom ha-melech mali v'lochem b'nei Tsruya. So the king says, what does it matter to me or to you? Hikoyi kalel v'ki Hashem omer lo kalel es David. Umi yomar madua asisa kain. What is this? How does he respond? So shall he curse. Why should he curse? Ki Hashem omer lo kalel es David. Because Hashem said to him, curse David. God himself was almost speaking to him that he should curse me. Because he'd have to be out of his mind to do what he's doing. And who can then say, why have you done this? So if we look in Rashi. Rashi says, and this again, focusing on the positive of David. Rashi says, unbelievably, Ko yikalil, ken yikalil, let him continue cursing me. Because afterwards, Hashem Omar Lo, says Rashi, Hashem has said to him, curse. Esher Adam Kemoso, is it possible that a person Kemoto, just like him, what is his position, says Rashi, as we mentioned before, Shurosh was Sanhedrin. This is not a simple person that was a homeless guy that was drunk cursing me out. No, this was one of the greatest people imaginable. Why would Shimi ben Gera, this great man, the head of the Sanhedrin, start spewing such hatred, such terrible words?
If I didn't deserve it.
Yikal es HaMelech, why would he be cursing the king? Im lo shenemro me'etz HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It must be that it's a direct sign that God is giving me this message, and he is the agent. Now again, that doesn't, of course, it's a whole discussion. That doesn't give you the right to be the agent to harm someone. You are not allowed to, well, your defense of killing someone isn't, well, obviously, if God didn't want that person to die, then he wouldn't have died. So it must be that I was just doing God's good work. You're not allowed to do God's good work, because that's a sin. You're not allowed to do an Avera. But on the receiving end, you have to look at it critically and say, you know what? There's a reason why this is happening to me. And the reason must be, as David said, is because I deserve it, and therefore I do not want you to cut off his head, I do not want you to kill him, rather I'm going to be makabel, accept these words, and hopefully I'll have the opportunity now to do tshuva. Stop here.